Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. We're going to be going over some things that we learned about the Packers this offseason. We have all of these grand ideas of what Green Bay needs to accomplish going into each offseason, and this offseason was no different. Packers had to go find a big-time pass rusher. Didn't happen. Green Bay Packers have to go and get a number one wide receiver. Maybe they ended up with one, but they certainly did not go after a well-established wide receiver like a Devontae Adams or a DK Metcalf. At least they did not come out with one either via trade or in free agency. We thought they had to go and attack corner aggressively, either via free agency or the draft. Well, they did sign Nate Hobbs in free agency, but they didn't draft anyone at corner up until Micah Robinson in the seventh round. Clearly, they needed to, you know, upgrade defensive tackle and bring in somebody new, whether it be a run stuffer or maybe a new pass rusher on the interior. No, not really. They let TJ Slayton walk, and then, you know, they go and get Warren Brinson in the sixth round. A lot of these ideas that we had and thought that the Packers were going to go out and accomplish in this offseason, whether it be via free agency, the draft, trade, or anything else, but till this point, a lot of it did not come to fruition. It's not to say that they've had a unsuccessful offseason or a successful offseason. It just means that we learned some things about the Packers that maybe we didn't expect going into the offseason. We're going to break that all down today. Now, before we get into that, just a couple pieces of news and notes. Reminder that OTAs are coming up again this week. Tomorrow on Tuesday, the Packers are opening their OTA to the media. So I will be there again tomorrow. Break it all down for you. We'll do a live post OTA Q&A later in the, early evening on Tuesday. So keep an eye out for that. This week, of course, coming up as well, we'll do our members Q&A and then happy hour on Friday. Not sure about the time on happy hour for Friday yet, but keep an eye out for that also. Also, just wanted to give a quick shout out to Ross Uglum, who you have seen on the YouTube channel, of course, on the audio podcast as well. This past month, Ross hit 400 episodes on the Pack-A-Day channel. If you are to go and listen to the, you know, almost 3,200 some episodes that are out there all time from day one up until today, you've got about an 11% chance that you are going to randomly hit a Ross Uglum episode. So I really appreciate all the time, effort, and energy that he has put into this team and into the Pack-A-Day podcast. And if you get a chance, give him a shout out for all the amazing work that he's done here on Pack-A-Day. No real news from the weekend from a Packers standpoint other than that. So that allows us to get into our topic right away, and we are going to do so right now. So what are I don't have a number of things. I think technically I've got about 13 or 14 things here that we learned about the Packers this offseason, but what was the number one thing that we really learned? And to me, it was very clear and it was very obvious. And that was that the Packers wanted to get bigger and stronger along the offensive line. I don't think anyone is going to debate you when you come to this conclusion, right? Now, the Packers added three primary offensive linemen in this offseason. There's a couple other ones, Trey Hill, some undrafted free agents, etc. But John Williams in the seventh round, Anthony Belton in the second round, and then, of course, Aaron Banks in free agency. If you look at the Packers roster right now, the heaviest player on the Packers roster, as we speak, is 335-pound Anthony Belton. Then you have Nasir Stackhouse, who they signed as an undrafted free agent at defensive tackle. Their next heaviest player is Aaron Banks at 325 pounds. Then you have Rashid Walker and Donovan Jennings at 324 and 323, and then John Williams at 322. So you've got three, four, five, six of your heaviest Packers on the roster. Three of them were added along the Packers offensive line, either via the draft or as a primary free agent. Again, Anthony Belton being the heaviest player on the roster, Aaron Banks being the third heaviest, and only, again, Nasir Stackhouse, who probably may or may not make the team, right? Probably leans a little bit more towards not, but you very well could end up with it being Banks and Belton being the two heaviest players on the Packers roster. they decided that they needed to go out and kind of remake this offensive line in real time. Now, this may not hit immediately, right? Aaron Banks is going to start. We know he's going to play a lot of games. Anthony Belton may not play this year. We could still see Zach Tom, who's not the biggest guy in the world at right tackle. Well, we know we're going to see Zach Tom, who's not the biggest guy in the world at right tackle. Elton Jenkins is moving to center. We could still see Sean Ryan at right guard, Rashid Walker left tackle. Neither small players, but this might primarily just be Aaron Banks this year. I don't expect to see John Williams playing out there a ton, if at all. Hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, he will not be out there. To me, though, this was a real indicator throughout the course of this offseason that the Packers wanted to get bigger, stronger, and more physical on the offensive line. Anthony Belton is big, yes. Now, he hits a lot of their movement traits and all the other things that they look for, but his demeanor is also that of a mauling, physical, nasty offensive lineman. I think you're going to love that when you watch him play. Now, Aaron Banks doesn't necessarily have that, but he has got a very fun moving style with great size. He's a dancing bear, and he can get to his space, and he's a really good run blocker. That's going to pay dividends for Josh Jacobs in this offensive line. Moving Elton Jenkins into center and having him take over for Josh Myers, who, in my opinion, was the worst run blocking offensive lineman that they had this past year. Those things matter, and we saw them, again, in real time throughout this offseason say, we need to be different along the offensive line. I love the upgrade. I love the change in philosophy. And I think it does coincide with Josh Jacobs coming to this team and just having a little bit more of a rough, physical, downhill style with Jacobs than maybe they had with Aaron Jones. And I want to be clear here. I'm not differentiating and saying that Jones is better than Jacobs, Jacobs is better than Jones, or anything in between. I'm just saying for this style and with what Jacobs brings to the team, I do think going a bit more physical, a bit more heavy, a bit more mauling up front is a really fun change of pace. And I think it's going to help them in goal to go situations and in the red zone. I think it's going to help them in short yardage and just even on early downs, right? We saw last year, Josh Jacobs had to do a lot of the heavy lifting in the run game on his own, and he was worth it. He could do it. But what he did is he took a lot of plays that should have been -3, -2, -1 yard runs and turned them into 2, 3, 4 yard runs. And turning a -3 yard run into a 3 yard run is a big deal. It may not seem like it, it's just a 3 yard run, but it is a huge difference between 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6, and 2nd and 13 or 2nd and 14. That is a big time difference. And Josh Jacobs did a lot of that. But all of a sudden, if your offensive line starts blocking better up front, and instead of what should be a 3, 4, 5 yard gain, he's now turning those into 15, 20, 40 yard gains. That's going to change things quite a bit as well. Changing that line where he first gets contacted from maybe 3 yards behind the line of scrimmage to 3 yards in front of the line of scrimmage could pay massive, massive dividends. In order to do so, they said, we need to get bigger, stronger, more physical up front. Again, how much that plays a factor into this year outside of Aaron Banks, we won't know. It's going to take some time. But I do think we saw a difference in exactly the type of player that they wanted all throughout the offensive line. And again, I think we really learned that they wanted to be different. And this was not just some happenstance. Well, you know, Aaron Banks just happened to be the best guard in the line, you know, or Anthony Belton just happened to be. No, this was premeditated. This is exactly what they wanted. They went out and executed on it and got much, much bigger along the offensive line. Number two is we learned that they were not complacent at wide receiver. Goody said on multiple occasions that they would have felt comfortable going into this year with the same wide receivers that they had. I think I do believe that to some extent. I think if we sat here today and it was still Dontayvion Wicks, Romeo Doubs, and Jaden Reed as your primary wide receivers with Christian coming back at some point, Mecole Hardman and Malik Heath and Bo Melton fighting it out for four, five, and six really up until the point where Christian Watson comes back. I could see a world in which maybe that would have taken place. The truth is also, though, that Green Bay did not feel like they were set at wide receiver, whether that be now or in the future. Like, they could just set it and forget it. And I think if you look back a year with how excited we were about the wide receivers in 2024 going into that year, coming off of a really fun 2023, take Christian Watson and put him aside because of the injury. if Romeo just looked as good as we hoped he would have looked a season ago, and copy and paste that same sentiment for Jaden Reed and Dontayvion Wicks, I'm not sure we would have seen the same enthusiastic vigor of getting a wide receiver in the first and third rounds. Not saying it's impossible, not saying that they wouldn't have, and a part of it might just be best player available. We're going to talk about that in a moment. Part of it might just be that they also want to look at the opportunity to move on from some of these players before they have to give them big contracts and all those sort of things. It could just be Christian Watson's injury as well. But the fact of the matter remained is whether or not they felt that they were telling the truth and how they felt comfortable at wide receiver with what they had, they also were not at the point where they could just overlook talented wide receivers that came to them. And in the first round with Matthew Golden, and in the third round with Savion Williams, they were willing to say, you know what? We think that they can add big time value to this team, and we are going to try to get better and have a ton of competition at wide receiver because we were not good enough in 2024. And again, maybe it's a little bit more happenstance with just the players that ended up being on the board. That could be the case, but I still feel like in a different world, in a different version where there's those wide receivers played better this past year, they don't do the same thing, regardless of, you know, grade on the board or things like that. This was a true indicator that, hey, Romeo Doubs, Dontayvion Wicks, Jaden Reed, you're going to have to earn your spot on the field this year. You're going to have to continue to compete to get your targets. And if you're looking for big contracts in the next year or two when you guys become available, you're going to have to go out and earn those too, because we're going to have other options that are available. We just spent a first rounder and a third rounder, and those guys are coming for your spots. So the message to me was loud and clear. We are not good enough at wide receiver, and this is going to upgrade us in some real way. And I'm all for the competition, and clearly Green Bay was as well. They love the competition, we know that, but they also did not stay status quo and were willing to do what it needed to take in order to get that competition to where it needed to be and just be better in that wide receiver room. We'll be right back. Hey friends, I'm so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. Now, ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of that byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down, so just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, to drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Now listen, I get it. I was a bit skeptical about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for a bachelor party, the college basketball tournament, and recently for a friend's epic 40th birthday party, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Summer's here, which means more opportunities to celebrate the warm weather, and before that backyard barbecue brew, the glass of Pinot watching the sunset at the beach, or a cocktail by the campfire, do not forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that summer has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code packaday. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/packaday and use code packaday. Pack a day at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our sponsors and use that code pack a day. Number three is that the Packers believe DeMarcus Covington can fix the defensive line. Former Patriots defensive coordinator has had a ton of success in New England working under Bill Belichick. He also is very well versed in numerous fronts, whether it be 3-4, 4-3, over under, whatever you want to use. He is familiar with it. They did a little bit of everything in that Bill Belichick system. And he's, you know, if you work with Belichick on defensive football, you usually have a pretty good PhD in defensive football if you've picked up enough from him. He's the master of it, of course. And the fact that Covington comes from that tree is a good sign. But as I mentioned earlier, we expected Green Bay to be aggressive in looking at defensive ends, defensive tackles, and guys that could potentially help this pass rush. And they didn't ignore it entirely. They go and get Baron Sorrell in the fourth round. They go and get Colin Oliver in the fifth, Warren Brinson in the sixth. That's really it. And they did lose TJ Slayton as well. So this is not just a offseason where Green Bay said, we're going to fix this with more resources along the line. They said, no, we're going to take a few day three guys, but we are going to give you a new defensive line coach because we already spent a first rounder on one defensive end, a first rounder on another defensive tackle, a first rounder on another defensive tackle, a first round on another defensive end. We've got the resources already put into this position. We just haven't got the ROI that we wanted from it. DeMarcus Covington, save us. And they clearly believe that firing Jason Rebrovich and bringing in DeMarcus Covington is going to make a big time impact. Because if they didn't, because if they felt like those four up front specifically, Clark, Wyatt, Gary, and LVN, were not going to be able to play much better, they would have had to have upgraded it in some real way. We heard from Goody directly that they need to do a better job of getting there with four. Clearly, they believe that they can get there with four, but it is going to take a little bit better coaching and certainly a lot better playing than what we saw last year if this defensive front wants to take that next step and be a better pass rushing unit. And now that falls onto DeMarcus Covington. And again, clearly Green Bay feels like he is the man for that job. Number four is they still feel very strongly about the interior of the defensive line. TJ Slayton is gone, as we talked about. Devontae Wyatt gets his fifth-year option picked up. They do get Brinson and Stackhouse as a sixth-round pick and an undrafted free agent. But we heard from Jeff Hafley a couple weeks ago talking about the interior of that defensive line. And with Colby Wooden, Carl Brooks, Kenny Clark, Devontae Wyatt, there was a lot of faith in those four guys. And it's interesting because, you know, Kenny, I think clearly, I don't even think arguably is the right word here, clearly had the worst season of his career last year. Now, not a bad season. He had a solid, fine, average season. But for him, that's a down year because he's usually pretty freaking awesome. Last year, he was not. He was fine. Devontae Wyatt did not take a massive step, and Carl Brooks and Colby Wooden kind of plateaued a little bit. There isn't a ton that would have you believe that that four is going to be able to provide you a ton more than what they did a year ago, other than, again, getting a new defensive line coach. Plus, you lose TJ Slayton, and you don't do anything until the sixth round. That's like generally a tough pill to swallow, and I've talked about it over and over where I have major concerns if Kenny were to go down at any point in time. For Jeff Hafley, it doesn't seem like it's bothering him at all. Seems like he loves his interior defensive line group. And maybe if he knows something about Carl Brooks or Colby Wooden or Devontae Wyatt or maybe even Kenny Clark that I don't or we don't. But the message was loud and clear from Jeff Hafley and really from the Packers organization as a whole that they did not need to go out and upgrade this position in a major way, really at all. Because flipping out TJ Slayton for a sixth-round pick is pretty much the only move that they made all offseason long. So they very clearly feel really good about their interior defensive line, something that I don't know that I would have expected going into this offseason. And then just to kind of go along and stick with defensive line, they clearly have not given up on LVN. Not that we would have expected anything different. They definitely want him to succeed, but this is another huge opportunity for LVN. And we've heard from numerous people, Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur included, that they expect LVN to have a big time breakout season. And if that can happen, yeah, Green Bay's defensive front's going to look really good. They're going to at least have an opportunity to look really good. And that definitely changes everything along that defensive front. But Green Bay is once again betting that their young, talented, top 15 defensive end can be really probably a difference maker this year and really change up that defensive front into something that was hit and miss, some games good, some games not so good, into a consistent force against the opposing offenses. They clearly trust him. They clearly believe in him, are not ready to give up on him. And not only that, but first OTA, he's working with the starters opposite Rashawn Gary. And as Justice brought up the other day, he has yet to start a game in his football career. Could we see it this year? It certainly seems like that could be the case, but they have a ton of faith still in LVN. All right, next up, we learned that the Packers did not want to go through another offseason of terrible kickers trying to make their way onto the Packers roster. They said, enough is enough. We got lucky enough to find Brandon McManus a year ago. We are going to sign him to a three-year, $15.3 million deal, an average of 5.1 mil per season, which makes him tied for the eighth highest paid kicker in the league. And it was worth every penny in my estimation. I joked about I did not want to see another offseason kicker battle. It would have been a whole wasted offseason to me. And listen, if you're a team that is legitimate about competing, you cannot go into another season with some sort of Anders Carlson situation or Greg Joseph situation. You had to have a better solution than that. And to get to the point again where you're bringing in some sort of draft pick in the seventh round or undrafted free agent, or again, you're rolling through 17 different kickers through mini camps, OTAs, training camp, etc. It just couldn't happen. They were smart enough. They figured it out. They got McManus back. And to me, that is a huge win. But they were clearly telling us as well, we don't want to go through that either. And they smartly, wisely brought back Brandon McManus. Next up is a word that we used a lot this offseason because Brian Gutekunst used it. We learned that the Packers have to have more urgency. This is still, I think, one of the more noteworthy aspects of this offseason. And this was misconstrued at various times, saying that, you know, they needed to have more urgency, so they needed to go all in or spend all this money. First of all, they did. They spent a lot of money on Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs. They did put their money where their mouth was in saying that. But this was a message to this young team that was stating, you guys have to have more urgency, really, as an entire roster, and we need to as an organization. It is time to start winning championships again. I love that message from Brian Gutekunst. He set the bar. He said the bar is it's time to win Super Bowls. You know, I think you get into this feeling when you're the youngest team 2 years in a row where, hey, there's this window that's just opening up and beginning. And there's an extent of that that's true. They still have that. But also, Brian understands that coming up in the near future are some of these young players that are very talented that are going to have some big time contracts. And you already know Zach Tom, Rashid Walker, Sean Ryan, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, of course. We can go on and on. There are numerous free agents coming up this next offseason. This team will look quite a bit different next year just from the, you know, free agents that they lose. Maybe they pick up one or two. They're, of course, going to have a whole nother draft next year, but this is going to be different. And they need to figure out right now that they have a really fun, talented, young roster that is ready to go out and compete. And the only way that they can reach that potential is by having that urgency. And Goody sees it. He knows it. That this is not a, hey, we've got 5 years to figure this thing out. And no, it's now. The time is now. And I'm not saying the window is closing anytime soon or that this is the 1 year where they have to go for it. I'm not saying anything like that. But the window is open now, which means take advantage of it. Use it. Go out and win. Go out and win a Super Bowl. Like, this is pretty much the same timeline that 2010 Packers team was on. Well, the 2010 Packers team had a lot of talent. I'm not saying that there's necessarily, you know, quite the same level of the Nick Collins and the Charles Woodsons and the, you know, Tremont Williams and how he played that year. Course, Aaron on offense, like there was a lot of massively talented players. We could go a lot longer than the four or five guys that I just mentioned, but that was a really great team. But that window wasn't expected to be quite open for them yet. And they smashed it down and said, we're coming right on through. We're winning this thing right now. And I think that's there for Green Bay too, but they have to have that urgency. And again, I love that call out from Brian Gutekunst. And again, we learned that the time for urgency is now. And it is a word that we've used a lot this offseason because Goody brought it to the forefront and put that on his team and said, we're going to be that team that uses that as motivation and goes out and wins at the highest level of possible. It is time. And to quote the great Kevin Green, it is time. Go out, do it, finish it, win it. That's the expectation in 2025. All right, number eight, the Packers remain committed to their draft board. I don't think this draft went exactly the way that the Packers were expecting. In fact, I pretty much know that. The reason I know that is because Goody said it. He said after the, you know, first three rounds of the draft that he did not expect to be up there talking about taking two wide receivers in the first three rounds. He talked about at the end of day three of how they were trying to maneuver their way to get extra picks and it just didn't work that way. Talked about trying to get picks for next year and it just didn't work that way. Talked about how they had a much higher grade on John Williams. Sometimes you have to be flexible, even though you have a vision going in for what you're trying to do or what you're hoping to do. I don't think their vision was taking two wide receivers in the first 2 days, in their first three picks. I don't think that their vision was, again, probably taking a player that they never expected to be there in John Williams in the seventh round. I don't think their vision was finishing with only eight draft picks. I think they probably would have preferred to have 12 or 13, but it didn't go that way. And you have to be able to call an audible and say, you know what? We had an expectation of what this was going to look like, but we're going to trust the process. We're going to trust the board, and we're not going to try to force anything. Again, I respect that process from Goody. Doesn't mean it's necessarily going to pan out. A long way to go before we figure out if this was a successful draft class or not. But I like the fact that Goody is going to say, you know what, rather than reach for something or do something that maybe we wanted to do, but now in the moment it doesn't make sense, we're going to look at what we were given. We were given a potentially consensus top receiver on a lot of people's boards that fell to, you know, Green Bay with their first round selection. And so they said, screw it, we're taking Matthew Golden, or even probably not even screw it, but we're celebrating that they got to take Matthew Golden. It seemed like a no-brainer at that point in time of the draft, and they made it that way. In the second round, I know a lot of people were probably upset that maybe Anthony Belton was the guy, maybe over a Trey Amos or something like that. But as we talked about, it was clear they wanted to get bigger and stronger on the offensive line. And now they get this behemoth of an offensive lineman that also happens to move really well and fit Green Bay's normal thresholds for the position when it comes to that movement ability. And they said, awesome, this is something that we can use, that we're looking for, that we're trying to accomplish. And now we have one for us here in the second round. And they didn't look a gift horse in the mouth, and they took him. And then in the third round, as we heard, they weren't expecting to take another wide receiver, but they have this super freak wide receiver who runs an unbelievably fast 40, that's 6'4", that is everything that you kind of look for at the position, despite maybe some drops here and there and just some nuance that he needs added as a route runner. But athletically gives you everything he wants, and really was a player that, you know, they found ways to utilize over and over because of his playmaking talent and ability. Green Bay says, we're not going to overlook that. We're just going to take that player because he looks really freaking good, and screw it, let's just get another wide receiver, whether we wanted one here or not. And again, trying to find trades, they just didn't come to fruition, and they just went with it. They just looked at every single pick and said, we're taking our guy. And that's what they did. And I think they ended up with a really strong draft because of it. I think they're going to be better off because they said, hey, this isn't what we expected, but this is what we got. We're going to make the most of it. And I think they ended up with a really strong draft class overall because they didn't reach or try to do something that just didn't make sense based on what was ultimately available. They're going to stay committed to that draft board. We heard it all weekend long. We heard it, you know, from Goody for years now, but it really felt like they did it even more so in this particular draft. Number nine, the special teams needed new faces. And that's, again, this is what the offseason told us. Eric Wilson was the number one special teams player for Green Bay. They easily could have brought him back if they wanted to, but they did not. TJ Slayton was surprisingly one of the top 10, mostly on field goal block and things like that, but he was a top 10 special teams guy. He is gone. You know, Corey Ballantyne was in that, I think, top five, top six, somewhere in there. He's gone. Robert Rochelle played on teams. There are other players as well, and there's some others that may or may not make the team. There was the Aaron Mosby was, right, somebody who played a ton. He probably doesn't make the team. They needed some new faces on special teams, and Green Bay said, yeah, we know, and we're going to go get those guys. Isaiah Simmons and Christian Welch at linebacker are two primary special teamers. Welch is going to have to find his way under the roster, but if so, they found two pretty big special teams players there in those two. Mecole Hardman as a potential punt returner and kick returner. Savion Williams can return some kicks. Colin Oliver, he really projects as a big-time special teams player. Michael Robinson and Nate Hobbs have that ability as well. They knew that the special team still hasn't been good enough, and they really needed to go out and address that in some way. And I feel like they did that with especially Hardman as a potential punt returner, but really some coverage guys as well. And I think Isaiah Simmons really has the ability to be a really freaky, fun special teams player for Rich Bisaccia and company. We'll be right back. Okay, so let me get this straight. You know ball, right? Well, there is only one series left in the playoffs, and the championship is officially on the line, and that means that time is running out for you to put your final takes to the test on PrizePicks, the best place to cash in on your favorite sports. Now, Prize Picks is going all out for the finals in both hockey and in basketball, and there's never been a better time to get in on the action and to start winning. And right now, you can sign up for Prize Picks and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is absolutely guaranteed. So do you think Shea will get more than 30 points? Halliburton more than 10 assists? Cook up your hot takes with your friends and win real money this postseason when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. This week, I'm kicking off the playoffs by going with big games from both Jalen Williams and Aaron Nesmith in the first two games of the series. And the best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly on your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Number 10, the Packers told us that they still have a lot of faith in Luke Musgrave. We heard that during press conferences, but also we're starting to see some a little bit, you know, more two tight end personnel packages, even in the OTAs last week. Not that that's ultimately telling, but we definitely saw some of it this past week. We heard from Adam Stenovich that they want to be able to use a little bit more two tight end sets. And maybe more telling was the fact that they did not go and get a tight end really at all. They brought John Fitzpatrick back. That was it. With Ben Sims not really taking that step and John Fitzpatrick just kind of looking like a back of the roster tight end, if they were starting to lose faith in Luke Musgrave or just feel like, hey, these injuries, they're just going to keep happening, they probably invest in that position a little bit more. Instead, they did nothing, absolutely nothing other than bring back John Fitzpatrick. This is still Tucker Kraft is number one, Luke Musgrave is number two, and then everyone else is going to be fighting it out for number three. But if they had any question in Musgrave, they could have looked at some trades. We heard some Kyle Pitts and Jonnu Smith rumors recently. We'll see if any of those actually happen, but they could have tried to get into that. They could have drafted plenty of tight ends all throughout the draft, and instead they stayed status quo, kept with what they had, and that I think shows a lot of faith in Luke Musgrave. Number 11, same similar dynamic here, but instead of Musgrave, just their stable of running backs. They clearly felt great. They only get two undrafted players, Amar Johnson and Jaylen White. And that's it. No veteran running back signing, no draft pick at the position. They just said, hey, we've got Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd, two really talented running backs in Christopher Brooks or Chris Brooks and then Emmanuel Wilson. We don't need to do anything else there. Yeah, if the right running back maybe would have fell to them, maybe they would have taken one just based off of value. But they clearly felt good about their running back room. Didn't try to press anything, stuck with it. And I think rightfully so. I really love that stable of backs, and they should be really well-rounded going into this season. Number 12 is we learned that Jeff Hafley may not be around for long. Maybe that's aggressive. It's telling to me that Jeff Hafley, after 1 year of being an NFL defensive coordinator in Green Bay, already received a head coaching interview with the Jets. I don't know how close he was to, you know, even like a finalist or a top three, top five. We don't know that, right? And he got, out of all the coaching jobs that were out there, he did only get one interview with the Jets. But again, the fact that a former college head coach comes to Green Bay as a defensive coordinator and he does so well in his first year that he immediately gets a head coaching interview, if he continues on that trajectory, if the Packers defense plays well again this year, I would clearly believe that Jeff Hafley is going to get even more interviews moving forward, and he could be not for long in Green Bay. I'm not hoping that's the case. I'm not wishing that's the case. I hope he's able to stay for as long as humanly possible. Obviously, for his sake, I hope he gets the job that he ultimately wants out there, but that is telling that in year one, Jeff Hafley already got an interview, and I think you're only going to see more of those moving forward if the Packers defense and Jeff Hafley continues to have success. He's as good as it gets on the microphone and at the podium and talking to reporters and getting up there. He's got head coach written all over him. And I think you can tell why the Jets and I think other teams in the future are going to be interested in his services at head coach. Number 13, the Packers are open to changing their mind. We've seen this. We've seen this specifically with the Jair situation. The Jair situation started as a situation where, hey, we're going to try to trade him. And then when the trade did not come to fruition, when they weren't able to figure something out, at least as of yet, they pivoted, and now they're trying to work things out with Jair. And a contract per Matt Schneidman, a contract restructure or renegotiation is on the table. They have made some sort of, you know, offer to Jair to kind of figure something out, some sort of compromise to have him back in Green Bay. What at you know, times earlier in this offseason felt like an impossibility, now feels like a legitimate possibility that he could be back in Green Bay. No deal signed, sealed, and delivered. No guarantee that he's back, but it just shows you that Green Bay is willing to pivot. If even, you know, through them trying to get rid of Jair, trade Jair for something, I don't think get rid of him, but trade him for something. If that doesn't happen, they're open to figuring out or reconciling or whatever that thing might be to still try to either get value for Jair or just realize we're not giving him up for nothing. And I think that ability to pivot and live in the moment and understand that, hey, sometimes factors change things. Maybe not getting the amount of corners in the draft and again, not getting any sort of real trade offer that is acceptable to them for Jair that has seemingly changed the calculus a little bit. They've been willing to do so. And now we may end up seeing Jair actually back in Green Bay. And last but not least, the last thing that we learned is that the Packers are able to host one hell of an NFL draft. And I'll just say this, it's big for Green Bay and it's big for the Packers because there was always this question of would they have the infrastructure to host something like this? And the answer is clearly, obviously, yes. And I don't know, I think that will mean another draft in Green Bay down the road. Probably not for a while yet, probably not another, you know, decade or two. Maybe the Packers get a new stadium at some point and it's kind of combined into that. But whatever the case may be, not new stadium, but another renovation, I should say. Whatever the case may be, I do think they've earned another opportunity for that, or maybe a combine, maybe a, whatever that thing might be. They show that they can handle whatever the NFL wants to give them. Probably not. I mean, I know they're not going to get a Super Bowl. Whether they could handle it or not might be another, you know, conversation in and of itself, but they did unbelievably well and showed the NFL, hey, give us what you got and we're going to be able to handle it moving forward, because the NFL draft is a massive event and Green Bay handled it with flying colors. So these are the 14 things that we learned this offseason about the Green Bay Packers. Number one, that they wanted to get bigger and stronger along the offensive line. Number two, that they did not feel complacent at wide receiver and felt like they could get better and did ultimately, I think, get better. Number three, that DeMarcus Covington can fix their defensive line. Number four, that they feel strongly, more strongly than I think a lot of us expected, about the interior of their defensive line. Also, they have not given up on LVN as a defensive end and feel still confident about him and that he can have a breakout year. Number six, we learned that they did not want to go through another kicking battle. Number seven, that they have to have more urgency. Number eight, that they remain committed to their draft board and picking the best player available. Number nine, special teams needed some new faces. Number 10, the Packers still have lots of faith in Luke Musgrave. Number 11, they feel good about their running back room and did not really need to add anything of value whatsoever. Number 12, that Jeff Hafley may not be for long, and Green Bay is going to have to be aware of that because he's probably going to continue to get head coaching candidate interviews. Number 13, that the Packers are open to changing their mind when they don't, you know, when something doesn't necessarily go according to plan. And number 14, that the Packers are capable of hosting one hell of an NFL draft. That's going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate you guys. I'll be right back here tomorrow talking Packers OTAs. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, most hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Ataka, Jason Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Guestford, Dylan Pat Scott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Jay Kohner, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkle, Single, Jen Wright, The Gable Store, Matt Geiger, and Pack Attack Cast. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Yo.